Hal, do you read me? You read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
Oh, that was Hal from 2001 A Space Odyssey, and notoriously that robot would not do as he was told. For decades we've been intrigued and terrified by robots. We are, it must be said, happy enough with a robot vacuum cleaner, robotic surgical assistants, they've got a guaranteed steady hand, maybe even a furry robot pet. But what about giving Granny a robot carer, particularly if she has dementia? Is that undignified, dehumanising, or just the stark reality, given the ageing population, when there aren't enough caring humans to go around? That's our conversation this morning. Do help me with the ethics here. 1-300-22-5576. 1-300-22-5576.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me, and I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Oh, the robots. Professor Wendy Moyle is the Director of the Centre for Health Practice Innovation at the Menzies Health Institute at Griffith University. Jonathan Roberts is Professor of Robotics at the Queensland University of Technology. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Does Hal terrify you as much as he does me?
No, certainly not.
What about you, Jonathan?
No, I can hear the actor's voice behind Hal, so it doesn't scare me at all.
All right, before we get to the ethics of all this, Wendy, you've had two robots out and about in long-term aged care homes in Queensland. There's about 380 dementia patients. How are they responding to Paro?
Very well.
So what's Paro?
Paro is a therapeutic robotic seal. So it looks like a seal. It weighs about the size, or it looks about the size of a newborn baby, and it weighs about the weight of a newborn baby.
Is it cute and furry?
Oh, very cute, and it responds really well to people. So if you respond nicely, Paro will respond very nicely back to you.
And how does Paro do that?
It talks to you in seal language, it snuggles into you, it looks at you with very beautiful eyes, and so it interacts with people.
And what about if I ignore Paro?
Paro tends to go to sleep if you ignore him, but then if you ignore for a while, he will start to wake up in terms of calling out to you to remind you that he's there. A bit like a dog or a cat in terms of pet therapy, being able to be comforted by the actual robot.
And you're trialling this with, as I say, 380 dementia patients. Go on.
Yeah, actually, we've completed the data collection. We had 415 people over 28 facilities in southeast Queensland, and we gave that population, we had three groups. So one group were given the Paro, one group were given Paro without any robotics, and the other group were given usual care.
So usual care, just a toy and a robot. And can you give us a sense of what the results were?
Well, we're looking at the data at the moment, but I guess I can say that some people really reacted very favourably to the robot. They really enjoyed having it. You could see it in terms of their emotional response, their behavioural response. And there were other people who had quite severe dementia who didn't like Paro at all and would throw Paro away. So we're looking in terms of whether Paro is good for a particular population or whether it's usable for a larger number of population.
And the other thing you were testing was a telepresence robot. From what I can gather, this is just a giant iPhone that lets you Skype the rallies. Is that about it?
Very, very similar, but it's mobile. The advantage of it is that it's really human height, human size in terms of the head on the robot as well. So you actually feel like you're in presence with that robot.
But hang on. It feels like someone's at home. Is that right? This feels like a someone.
Exactly. So you feel like that mother or father or daughter or whoever is actually in the room with you. But the other big advantage of it is, unlike an iPad or an iPhone that you have to control, and if you have cognitive impairment through dementia, it's very difficult to do that. So the in terms of the telepresence robots, we give the software to family. So family could be living in New York and they can wake the robot up in the person's home. The person with dementia doesn't have to have the capability to be able to turn the robot on, work out the software, etc.
And how have your dementia patients responded to a robot coming to life with a relative on the screen?
We were told at first that people thought that people with dementia would be very frightened of this robot, but we haven't found that at all. They're very intrigued with it. They love the opportunity to talk with their family or friends on the robot, to take them out for a walk in the garden, to show them around the nursing home, for example, that they're living in. So it's been very favourable. Okay. No negative responses at all.
Okay, Jonathan, I'm really quite happy with the robot vacuum. That doesn't trouble me. But how much further could this go? Could we end up with companion robots that don't deputise for a seal or an iPad with Skype on it, but for a human or even a surgeon?
I think so. There is a long-term dream and effort to create a humanoid robot that's a more general-purpose robot. So the problem with robots developed at the moment is they're usually very specific, because that's all we can do at the moment. So the vacuum cleaner is a great example. So, of course, our homes have been designed for humans, so everything's at human height. The kitchen benches are set up for humans. The door handles are where they are. If we could have a general-purpose humanoid robot, it would be far more capable. So there is a large effort across the world to design more general-purpose humanoid-scale robots.
Now, you're experimenting with this in surgery. How do you use a robot to conduct knee surgery?
So in our particular work that we're doing in knee surgery is to try and give human surgeons a robot assistant. So that is the particular thing we're doing is knee arthroscopy, and that's a challenging procedure, but just because the surgeon has to hold a lot of instruments, cameras, they have to hold the patient's leg, and there isn't much room to manoeuvre inside the knee. So if we can give the surgeon a robot assistant that, you know, the robot holds the leg, it holds the instruments, the surgeon is still using their clinical skills and judgment to control the robot, but the robot's smart enough to do all that really fine motor stuff, then the hope is that there'll be better patient outcomes.
And there's also this unsettling image I have thinking about what you do. You've got a room in which you have human cadavers, dead bodies, and you have robots operating on them.
Well, so that's actually a fairly standard part of medical research. So many universities and university hospitals and the like that do medical research have body bequest programs, and our university is one of those that has a body bequest program. So people at the end of their life decide they want to donate their body to medical research, and then some of the cadavers, as they're known, once they're in the facility, are used for medical training. And robotic surgery is one of those examples. So in order to do some of the very early tests, you know, we need to use something that's very realistic. And obviously we can't use someone that's alive. So we use, the knees of these people that have generously donated their bodies.
And in that way you can develop a robot to have that fine motor skill. But also, am I right in thinking, to begin to be able to learn?
Yes, the robotics at the moment starting, there's a new sort of revolution. So everyone thinks of the robot in the physical form, but actually the revolution's more in the intelligence side and about learning. So you'll hear these terms in the media and in the research literature called machine learning. So that's robots that are starting very, very early steps, but they're starting to learn by themselves. And an example of the last few weeks was a robot that beat a grandmaster in a South Korean game, a bit like chess, called Go. And that robot was never taught the rules. It just observed people playing the game, and it ended up beating the world champion 4-1. So the robot system learnt how to play that game all by itself.
1-300-225-576, 1-300-225-576. What are your thoughts on robotics in aged care? Does the thought of a humanoid robot concern you, or is this simply too far into the future? Wendy, just a few years ago, you struggled to get funding for these sorts of trials, but are we looking at the prospect of being able to use robots to do more than just replace a pet in aged care?
Yes, absolutely. I think in the past people were a bit frightened. I think there's now much more of an openness, although there are still people who accuse me of taking over the world with robots and replacing humans.
But is that what you want to do in an aged care facility? If you haven't got enough carers there, how much could a robot realistically do?
So if we look at Japan, which has the fastest growth in terms of an ageing population, they've really been developing a lot of what we would call service or assistive robotics. So things that lift people, wash them perhaps in the bed, take them to the bathroom, serve them meals, etc. So these are robots that really assist people to stay either longer in their homes or assist in the nursing homes so that staff have opportunity to do other things. It's very challenging now. We have very short numbers of, or very small numbers of staff already working in care homes, and we have people who are very compromised, very frail. Excuse me. So we need assistance in many ways, and robots can do that.
Jonathan, can they do that? I mean, I've just got this image of being stuck on a toilet with a robot that's run out of batteries or won't listen.
Of course, there's going to always be technical challenges, such as the malfunctioning robot.
And is that the biggest ethical issue for you? Because I've got 20 other ethical issues I could hit you with.
Well, one of the challenges with robotics of all of this type is actually getting them to the level where they're acceptably reliable. So, and you've got to get over that hump at the beginning, and that's actually quite a hard thing to do, because obviously you're starting off with an experimental system, and in the particular case of aged care, you can only try it on people that are elderly and have the conditions you're trying to assist them with. So there is this phase and this engineering problem as well. It's not just a sort of a social or ethical problem of trying something out, finding the people that are willing to try it out. Inevitably, there'll be things won't go perfectly. You've got to go back and explore what went wrong and modify them and generally improve the reliability. So there's no denying it at the start with all these sorts of things. They won't be as good at the beginning as they are once they're mature.
But Wendy, all of this is being trialled on elderly people, people with dementia or impaired cognition. The idea being, I suppose, that you can fool them with these machines into thinking that they are having a caring experience, but they're not.
No, certainly we trial all of our robots in. We have a social robotics laboratory at Griffith University, and everything that we trial is done there first. So with people who come into the laboratory, and then once we assure that they're feasible, we then take them out actually into the field. When we give people a robot, so for example the Paro, which is like a baby seal or an animal, we tell them that it's not real. We give it to them and say, this is a robotic seal, it can do these sorts of things, we're leaving it with you to play with. Most people realise that it's not not real, but very soon it's so realistic in its behaviour that you tend to think that it is real. I know myself, I can sometimes lie down with three or four of them on the floor, and it's very comforting because you imagine in some way that they are real animals because they interact very readily with people. So I'm not certain whether it's...
Does it matter that they're not real? Do you suddenly bring yourself around as you're lying there on the floor, Wendy, and think, well, hang on, these are machines. I'm not being comforted at all. This is an illusion.
Certainly the people that we give it to, as I say, majority of people love the Paro. And if I brought it to you, I'm sure you would love it as well. And you would probably very quickly say, well, it's a robot, but, oh, it's so lovely that I can manage to, you know, work with this. And I think we get the same reaction from people with dementia as well.
All right. We have a caller on the line from Melbourne. Connie, do you like this idea?
Look, I think it's brilliant, and I work in public health. I think that people are so displaced these days that any way you can connect them with their family is great. I would prefer real dogs, but I think sometimes that's just not, you know, they're not able to care for that. But the other thing I think that's really important is that it's humans using technology, not technology using humans, and you just need to have a really good on and off switch.
But how do you do that? I mean, I'm wondering if there isn't a certain deception involved in having a confused older person in the future talking intimately about their life and their grandchildren with a robot, thinking it's a real nurse.
No, I wouldn't have it be a robot that was a fake person. I wouldn't go that far. I would only use it in the context of that it was a family member.
Coming through the Skype screen.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't. Now, what I would think about doing is there's so many lonely people in the world. There's so many people in their 60s and 70s that are still living at home, and they're lovely. They talk everybody's ear off. If you get those people calling the ones that are really frail and infirm, you've got to match up real humans with real humans. But matching up family who are living remotely on a robot, I think that's one of the most brilliant ideas I've heard. I think the seal sounds wonderful. Yeah, I'm all for it, but selectively. I wouldn't. Dementia patients, I'd be very careful with.
1-300-225-576. 1-300-225-576. Any sci-fi buff knows that when robots become self-aware, they destroy their creators. Am I the only one freaked out by this prospect? Ilona's on the line from Byron. Are you excited or terrified?
I'm excited. I work with elders who have dementia, and they're put into human care. Humans have flaws. And the most important element of all of this is what's best for the people who have dementia. So caring for them, having, we've got at the moment virtual reality helmets that are now turning into augmented reality or mixed reality, where there's almost like holograms that will be coming up of family members to help them with their care. So I think that anything that brings comfort to someone who's very confused and very distressed is really the most loving thing that we can do, and I think that's what we have to look for.
That's a wonderful call. Thank you for it. John Perkins is a Sydney IT developer. His group is developing an app which will allow the family of an elderly person living at home to know for sure they're okay. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Alan.
So if Mum lives in Adelaide and I'm in Brisbane, what can I know about what she's doing at home using this app you're developing?
Well, you'll be able to know whether Mum's got out of bed, whether Mum's opened the fridge, whether she's turned the stove on. So you'll have a level of comfort that Mum's, one, she's up, two, that she's actually eating at regular intervals, and you'll also be able to see that she's moving around the house, so knowing that she's not isolated to a room for the day.
And so you know that because you've got, sensors under the bed and sensors in the fridge door, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's correct. And it's really, to your earlier speakers around machine learning, all those sensors will talk to each other and you'll be able to make intelligent decisions around how Mum's going during the day.
And can you extend that? I mean, can you feed other things into the app to monitor Mum's health, for example?
No, exactly. So things like blood pressure, glucometers, weight scales, etc., all feed into the application. So you can get a view that Mum's, if she's got a blood pressure issue or a chronic disease, you can actually see how that's tracking and trending, so you know that she's, one, she's comfortable, and two, she's moving around.
And to what extent are you linking up technologies that already exist, like an Apple Watch or a digital watch on someone's arm?
Yeah, well, with all the smart watches and devices that are out today now, Alan, you're able to actually sense what's happening to the body via those watches, so you're able to see that they're moving around, but also things like a fall that Mum's had a fall because the watches have smart accelerometers in them.
So if she suddenly goes down fast, then you can conclude that she fell.
That's correct. And with the help of the other sensors, you can see that her motion stopped, and therefore make a decision that, yeah, it looks like there's a risk of a fall.
You know, when we're talking about robots, John, you know, you wonder to what extent a humanoid robot is well into the future. How far into the future is sort of rigging up an old person's home, family home, with sensors in this way you describe?
Yeah, well, the beauty with these sensors is really the two key things that we find that most families want to know is, one, that mum is safe in the home, and two, that the social isolation of someone staying in the home longer has been reduced. And one, the sensors, and also using things like video conferencing to external members, it's available today, and it's available to purchase some of these items straight off the shelf, places like JB Hi-Fi.
And do you find that less unsettling than robots? I mean, it is a bit invasive in that, you know, Mum, I'm sure Mum knows, but we're spying on her rather than coming in and saying, "G'day, Mum, how are you?" and putting on the kettle.
It's, and that's where, Alan, it's a spectrum of technology where, yeah, robots certainly have their place, and with the challenges of reduced workforce and increased elderly, robots have their place there. But being able to interact with Mum and see Mum on a screen, and the standard devices that Mum has in the phone, might be an iPad or a computer or a phone, being able to interact with Mum when you're living in Sydney and she's in Adelaide, being able to make contact with her on a regular basis, I think it's less invasive, and it's certainly a very good use of where technology is today.
Thanks very much for that, John.
Thank you.
John Perkins, IT developer with the Ethan Group in Sydney, talking about one step less, I guess, than a robot. Jenny's on the line from Mornington. What do you think of this conversation, Jenny?
I think we've lost our minds, quite frankly. I think this is sort of just a symbol of what we think ageing and aged people are about. They're just an annoyance, a problem to be dealt with. And we're ignoring the fact that the people who care for them also get something out of this exchange, that old people have a value, and that it's a two-way interaction. I have a friend who works with elderly people, and she gains a lot from that experience. And I think that, you know, the fact that there's not enough people to work in those jobs is because the pay is terrible. If we as a society paid more for that work, then people would want to do it. And if we make it a job for robots, all the money will just go to the corporations that make the robots and not into the communities. Yeah. To pay the carers. I think we've lost our minds.
Thank you very much for that call. Jenny thinks we've lost our minds. Michelle's in Heathcote. What do you think? Are you equally unsettled?
Exactly. Good on you, Jenny. I agree with you 100% on that. Yes, I just find it appalling. I can't imagine. My mother at the moment is going through the end of her life in a nursing home, and the staff there at absolutely amazing. They're caring. The interaction between them is so important, and particularly at this time, and most people that are in nursing homes are heading toward that end goal. But their interaction with those carers is absolutely important, and it's just the matter of whilst on the toilet having a joke with that person. I can't imagine a robot being able to do that. I just find it appalling, yeah, and Jenny was absolutely right.
Thanks so much for the call. Fiona's in Sydney. You work in this field, technology and human interaction. What's your take on this discussion?
Hi. One of the problems is it's all very well to have something looking friendly if the person they're interacting with is happy, but if you get stressed, whether you're in a hospital or whether you're a person in old care, then you go into something called allostatic load. And what happens then is the difference between the interaction with a robot and the interaction with a human being, or technology, and the interaction with a human being is a human being does things like retinal eye lock, which synchronizes right hemispheres of your brain and changes the amygdala and increases
oxytocin. What does that do?
Well, what that does is if you're my nurse and I trust you, and you come in because I've become stressed, I'm worried, or I have pain, or I'm in early dementia and I'm in a situation where I'm stressed about something, as soon as I see you, your eyes and my eyes will lock retinas, our right hemispheres will synchronise, and because I trust you, you will calm me down physically.
Just because we're looking at each other.
Because of retinal eye lock.
Because
no
we're looking at
each
other.
No computer can do that because yeah. We're physically face-to-face looking at each other.
All right, that's an interesting point. Thank you for the call, Fiona. Let's come back to Professor Wendy Moyle and Professor Jonathan Roberts. Jonathan, should we be able to create, or could we be able to create a robot that could replicate that, is capable of moral feeling and judgment?
It's a very good question, and it's probably a long, long way away. I mean, the machine learning things that have been developed so far are simple. They're games. They're things like that. It's very hard to predict how fast this field will move. But I wouldn't expect we'll be replicating humans anytime soon. Probably not any of us that are going to get old won't have a sort of a humanoid robot that we can't tell apart from a real human.
And Wendy, what's your nirvana? It seems that you could aim to design a humanoid robot with all the knowledge and caring skills, which does what it thinks is best, right? Or you could attempt to create the same thing that somehow is sensitive to patient need. Which would be better?
If I could just say, the last two callers, I mean, I empathise with what they're saying, but we're not suggesting that we take away humans. We're suggesting that robots can actually help with the care of people. So, for example, when staff are busy, that a person with dementia may call a robot to do something for them, bring them a glass of water when they need it, take them somewhere along the lines. Robots that are being developed now, there is some suggestions that they have some ability to understand emotional response, and that's certainly an area that's being worked on. I agree with the caller that people to people is probably what we all want, but there are opportunities that can, you know, technology can be useful for. And it's certainly something that we need to consider for the future.
And where are the limits? Do you create a robot that just follows instructions blindly, or do you create a robot that maybe can learn and feel and respect your rights and reflect your wishes?
Well, certainly the second version would be the much
better
one.
See, I find that more terrifying. That more terrifying somehow, that somehow you're going to give this thing agency.
Yeah, but if it's able to understand your feelings, then you can also perhaps, that it can interact with other human beings and tell humans about what you want as well.
All right, I think we could keep going for another hour happily, but thank you both very much for your time there in the Brisbane studio. It was a little bit remote, cold and robotic. Would have been nicer face-to-face, wouldn't it?
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Jonathan Roberts is Professor of Robotics at the Queensland University of Technology. Wendy Moyle is the Director of the Centre for Health Practice Innovation at the Menzies Health Institute.
My instructor was Mr. Langley, and he taught me to sing a song. If you'd like to hear it, I can sing it for you.
Yes, I'd like to hear it, Hal. Sing it for me.
It's called Daisy. 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 Give me your answer, too. I'm half crazy. All for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't.